This episode contains themes of disreality, possession, brief mention of clowns, memory loss, mention of death, mention of medical malpractice, body horror, and monsters. Listener discretion is advised.
My name is Deja Woolery. My pronouns are she, they, and my character is Conrad Hope, whose pronouns are they, she. Conrad is an Olivia Pope-style fixer for the magical world. They used to only deal with human things until a surgery went wrong and the doctor left an item in her wound. When it was retrieved, Conrad found a magical amulet and started getting involved in the magic world, where they're absolutely infamous for handling problems using the playbook of the Crooked.
Hi, my name is Calamity. My pronouns are she, they, and I will be playing Iris, who is using the Divine Playbook. Their pronouns are they, them, and they are a celestial being cast down from the heavens, now living on Earth, eating cereal out of boxes with their hands.
Hi, my name is Jalen. Any pronouns I play is E.A. Pruitt, he, she, they. Pruitt is the spectacular, a magical carny that gave up their entire life to work at the circus, a mystical carnival that makes deals to make people's dreams come true.
Hi, everyone. And that leaves me. I am CJ, and I am the game master for Woeful Revelry. Let's get started. Our story starts again in the Center City storage units, where Iris is facing off against a 10-foot-tall Iceman. Pruitt has become something more and something less, the next ringmaster. And Conrad is standing right in the center of it all. And we begin. As the newest ringmaster shows their face and the landscape begins to take form, Conrad, Iris, and the ringmaster fall and are suddenly shunted into a space they are unfamiliar. It's black, an obsidian void, and as you fall, feeling weightless for but a moment, you feel that you are engulfed by the void, and it is cold, yet warm, and soundless, and a little peaceful. And then you blink and open your eyes, and you are in a seat with hundreds, thousands, a million unfamiliar faces in a familiar place under a pinstripe tent of red and gold. You all sit in a circus, but not the one that you know. As you look around, maybe seeing some people that are your neighbors, the milkman, the convenience store worker down the street, that one white lady that walks her dog. You look around in confusion until your eyes are drawn to the center. There's one individual and one that you know well. With a face that leaves you a little stunned, you see Pruitt in a voice that sounds like it is filled with hope and despair. Hello, all. Welcome to the Once in a Lifetime show. We offer you this opportunity to gain everything you've ever wanted right in this moment. But you gotta put on a good show. To those that think they deserve to make their dreams into a reality, come down now. And that call to action echoes through the circus. This new circus. One where the rafters seem to extend into the sky and the roof of the tent is unending. Iris. But a moment ago, you were engaged in heated combat against Frost. But now, you sit in the seat like a spectator, and you've been offered to make your dreams into a reality. What do you do?
I think at first, they're very cautious. They think they're used to strange things happening at this point, and just sort of wonder, like, what's the catch? That's always their first thought when they get into these situations. What's the catch? So I think they sort of just sit there and take in their surroundings for a second. Huh. So what's this about?
Yeah. And one thing that immediately strikes you is that you look to the center and that's Pruitt. Without a shadow of a doubt, you see Pruitt's face, the same, like, gait. Nope, that's walking. The same stance, the same, but with a different outfit on and a top hat that just goes to the sky.
And I think they'll tilt their head and say, Pruitt, what happened?
Yeah. And I think kind of as you ask that, I'm going to just really quickly over to Conrad. You would know. You know exactly what happened. But everything is different. And you have been offered an opportunity as you look at the new ringmaster down in the center of it all. And I'll even say that, like, as you are kind of sitting here, you see people getting up. Not a lot of them. A lot of people seem to be scared. A lot of people seem to be like, what's going on here? And then, like, silence. Like, small jesters seem to be walking around, just holding up signs that say, don't ruin the show. And there's just, like, both a lot going on and just this tonally different fear among people. You see Frost, well, I don't think you know who they are. You see about a 10-foot tall, like, ice white skin, like white hair, Chris Evans looking person just walking to the center of the stage, kind of like waiting, as well as maybe someone else. You see a woman with green hair kind of going down with like a wide brimmed hat. And I think you also hear kind of Iris somewhere in the distance go like, what's going on here?
I'm honestly a little bit stuck on the Chris Evans part. Okay.
Look, Calamity said it last week, and I was like, okay.
That is a white man of color. I think Conrad feels stressful situations after they happen. Conrad analyzes before she feels. I think what she's wondering is if Pruitt can offer deals, and if the right deal with the right consequence can take down Frost. But for now, all Conrad wants to do is find Iris. I think Conrad just starts like pushing through the crowd like indiscriminately towards where they heard Iris's voice.
Yeah. Do you say anything? Do you call to Iris?
No. I think I'm too afraid to. I don't recognize it as fear though. I just know I feel like I have to be silent.
Yeah. And as you kind of like walk through Iris, what's your kind of immediate, like, after just this call? Like, what's going on? What's that immediate thing that you're doing?
I think Iris, they're going to sort of walk towards, but not like they're going in. Like, it's more like they are, like, going up to Pruitt more so. And saying, like, trying to, like, get their attention and figure out what's happening. Because last time they saw Pruitt, Pruitt was chilling.
Yeah. You still have your wings out. I remember that's one of the things that you were doing.
Yeah, I think their wings are still out, yeah.
Do you, like, basically kind of leap out of the seat? Are you flying? Or are you just kind of running through the crowd, trying to go down the steps, like, in a big auditorium?
I think, yeah, they would be going down the steps, not flying so much because they're not sure what's going on, and that could potentially put them in a more vulnerable position. So they're just sort of, like, walking down right now, but, like, wings at the ready in case something goes sideways.
Yeah, I think easily you kind of like you get up because no one's going to stop you. The little clowns, the little jesters that want people to stay silent, they're not. You can tell that they're here for one job. And you kind of like get easily out to the stairs and just kind of walking down. And I think at that point, easily, Conrad, you would see that Iris is like running down the steps towards like the ringmaster.
I know well enough that when Iris is curious, curiosity may have killed the cat, but not Iris. I'm staying close by, but I don't want to stop them. I want them to be able to go up to Pruitt and ask questions that I wouldn't think to ask. That's why we make a good team, and I'm a little too stuck right now to do anything else. But I'm sticking very close to Iris. If the fight goes down, I'm gonna be there.
Yeah, so you're following?
Hell yeah.
Easy. As Iris, as your feet touch the ground to the spotlight, you are greeted to a few faces. I'm sure there's a lot going on. You don't need to be watching everyone that comes down here, but I think about maybe 5 or 6 individuals stand down here out of the hundreds, thousands, millions of people that you can very clearly see within these stands. Very few have decided to answer the call of the ringmaster. You see a red-suited individual standing right there in the center, as close as possible to the ringmaster, easily. Cooper Redtone. You see that same 10-foot-tall, frosty giant with that spear kind of like strapped to their back. Frost down here as well. And then you see someone who I don't think you have ever met before. They just look a little radiant. She kind of stands with kind of green dyed hair, with a warmth into her skin, kind of with a dark brown complexion, and just looking confident. And I think as Conrad, you come down right after Iris, you would also recognize this individual as Veronica Gao, the Witch of the West. Well, the Witch of the West City. And I think kind of as you two, I'm assuming you're running up towards the Ringmaster, Iris. What do you say?
I think seeing the familiar faces, like, wasn't really paying attention to anyone before, but now seeing the familiar faces sort of looks around, really just confused. I mean, Iris is generally confused, but even more confused now than usual. So I think that they will look at Pruitt. I don't know if they've noticed Conrad quite yet, because is Conrad like behind?
Yeah, following you.
Okay, so hasn't really noticed Conrad yet, but is sort of like, Pruitt, what's going on? What happened?
Yeah, and you ask this, and the ringmaster just kind of turns to you and says, well, it's the circus. What's going on with you?
And like immediately Iris is like, yeah, no, something's up. And like looks around at everyone else, doesn't 100% think this is Pruitt, which isn't wrong, but sort of looks at everyone else and says, why are we all here?
And I think at that point, Conrad, your feet kind of like saunter down onto the ground of the show floor, the dirt, honestly, of the show floor. And I think the first person to speak would probably be Frost. And they just kind of say, well, you heard them, didn't you? I'm here to make what I want come true. And then the floor kind of opens as I'm like, you guys can speak.
I think Iris, because Frost is who Iris last saw before this all went down. So sort of turns to the Frost and goes, well, what do you want?
He kind of looks at you and then kind of looks at the ringmaster and says, not tell you if I need to, but I have a feeling that whatever is about to happen, you might find out.
I think at this point, Conrad is well aware Frost will not be providing anything of value. Conrad has met too many Frosts. But Veronica, I have questions. So I think Conrad would just turn to Veronica and say, how did you get involved with this?
And I think Veronica just kind of looks at you and points upwards and says, well, I was sitting in my office at home reading a book until I blinked and found myself here. And I think that's the same thing for everyone. And as she just kind of like looks around at the literal countless folks around, though, when I'm presented with something that I want, I'm inclined to do something about it. Why are you here?
That was such an answer, non-answer. I think Conrad and Veronica have at least one thing in common, and that is nothing gets a direct answer.
Oh, of course.
Conrad replies, the only reason I end up most places, I'm working.
Going to the carnival on the job? Interesting. And then I think she just kind of like looks over at the ringmaster and is like, that's not the same one as I recall. Do you know what's going on here? Because that looks like a new ringmaster. And that one doesn't have a mask.
I know as much as I need to know.
Of course, never giving anything without a little something, but that's why I love you. And I think kind of like as the six individuals kind of like wait expectantly, I think you all kind of hear something that you probably wouldn't have expected. A rip into the tent, and you just and you see like a hand, like, and it's dark everywhere else other than this center spotlight. So it draws your eyes, but for a moment, and you hear the voice of, well, not to be confusing, the former ringmaster, just kind of shoving their hand through the tent, ripping it open, and says, "What's going on here?" And kind of like takes a step forward, and you see, well, Pruitt, formerly Pruitt, just says, and just snaps. And you see the tent kind of fix itself and the old ringmaster, poof, gone. To be a problem for a later point, but the new ringmaster looks at you all and says, kind of spins their cane and says, "I hope our conversations are over. You all ready?" Most people look determined, ready for whatever is about to happen. And most of these people know what the old circus is capable of. Conrad, you know deep in your heart that this isn't the old circus. And I guess I ask at the same time, are you ready?
Yes.
Iris, are you ready?
And I think Iris is kind of shocked at Conrad's answer because they're still like, what's going on? My question hasn't been answered. But sort of backs so that they're next to Conrad. I'm here. That's all.
And I think as you kind of, you say that, and you all, you both hear the resounding yes towards the ringmaster. And I think they just smile. And that smile goes a little bit too long, kind of from ear to ear, but literally. Almost like the Cheshire Cat. And they say, let's get this show started. And tap, tap, it echoes around you all. The reverberation kind of rattles your bones. And as you blink, each of you are somewhere different. And we'll say, Iris, you open your eyes to natural light. And immediately, I think it takes you a moment to realize where you are. You are in a garden, maybe eating an apple, maybe a little bit of light reading, under the sun in the shade of a beautiful cypress tree. You hear laughter from afar. You see a few animals kind of running about. You see a zebra, maybe like a bear as well. Maybe just like, maybe a few hedgehogs just kind of scampering about. It's quaint. It's peaceful and it's perfect. And as you kind of like take this all in, kind of the joy of just like, wow, this is so nice. It sets in at where you are. What do you do?
They're very cautious still, but puts the book down and sort of stands and looks around and starts walking towards maybe like where they know like the exit of the garden is, or like somewhere like maybe like a hub, like gathering place, if that makes sense. Like somewhere where they think other people might be.
And I think as you exit the garden kind of through the little gate, you begin to walk as like you are recalling where things are, kind of like, oh, there, right there is where me and my siblings had dinner on that picnic. Or, oh, that's where I fell and scraped my knee when I was younger, really still trying to learn how to control everything. And you kind of look up and it's like, oh, I think this is where I figured out how to fly. Just everything, everywhere, bringing back a memory of that past life. And as you kind of walk, you eventually come to a familiar pavilion. And you see people. And they're not quite far away. I'd say, I don't actually know a number of feet, but about like a minute away. Just, I don't know, maybe you're like the length of a park. You can see it. And you can see that folks are gathered there. And you're able to walk up.
As they're sort of walking through, looking at everything, a sort of like sadness sets in. They sort of like smile at some of these places, but definitely still a sadness in their eyes. And as they approach the pavilion, they hesitate to speak because as familiar and as beautiful and as just lovely as everything seems, they kind of are aware it's too good to be true, knowing what they know. So they will approach But they won't say anything. They'll just sort of get close and wait for the people to notice them.
Yeah. And I think as you kind of like tentatively walk up, just kind of like examining everything, I think your movement kind of catches the eye of everyone there. And maybe, who do you think who would be the first to turn around?
Probably their brother, who is about like maybe a little older than them. They could be twins.
Yeah. And I think they just kind of turn around. And it's like, Hermes, how are you? Did you enjoy your time in the garden?
You take a deep breath. As always, brother.
And I think they just kind of run up to embrace you.
And tears just well in their eyes.
And they just kind of like come out of the embrace. Are you okay? What's going on? Kind of wiping tears from your eyes.
And their hesitation just grows because they want this. Like, there is a part of them that wants this to be true so, so badly that maybe they could just forget everything they had just seen, everything that had just happened. This is a dream they've had multiple times, just everything back to the way it was. And they will say, do you not know? Do you not remember?
Remember what? I about an hour or so ago, you said that you were going to take some time to yourself. Am I remembering that correctly? Do you need something? Oh, God, did...
No.
Did Dionysus spike my drink again?
No. Plus, that would have been me anyway.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I feel as if something's wrong here. The last time I saw you, you held a spear to my face.
Oh, well, I mean, were we sparring?
No. It was on the order of Zeus. Do you not remember, brother?
I do not. And you can just kind of see this kind of like confused look, just kind of like trying to piece these things together. And it's like, clearly that's not the case anymore. You're here. I wouldn't want to do that.
Of course not. Why would you? But what Zeus says goes, lest you suffer the same fate as me.
Maybe it was a bad dream. I mean, you're here now, though. You're fine. You're safe. You're with us. And just kind of like gestures to the rest of the family, who all are kind of standing there watching this play out. And they all have this look of concern and care, that look that you've seen before time and time again, mistake after mistake, but that same level of love ever present in these looks. And you see them kind of coming closer, just kind of to make sure that you're fine. And your brother's like, maybe it's just a bad dream. I mean, nevertheless, we're fine and we're here for you, as you kind of just see all of them in, I guess, kind of the shot of like, if it was a camera, you just, as those words kind of ring through you, you just see them all. They are here for you, and they mean that.
And when they approach, Iris takes a slight step back and looks down at themselves. I imagine they're in not the mortal clothes they once
were. No, you are in that familiar white with gold flecks that just is too perfect for it to be anything mortal.
And they sort of grasp at the material, kind of like at their heart, and say, I have missed you all so. And the tears are falling now. But I learned long ago there is no way I can have this again. Not really. Not without a price. It sort of like looks up.
Yeah, and I think it hits you because you finally look up. There is that same tent. Well, the new tent. You see it. The gold and the red, the new color scheme, but the same style. You're still in the circus.
And I think there's almost a look of relief. And they sort of drop their hands and, still looking up, say, "You make dreams come true, but we all must wake up eventually. Isn't that right? What do you want from me?"
And I think just the bodies of your siblings kind of straighten in unison. And they all say at the same time, with the same voice of that ringmaster, "What do you want of yourself? You could stay here forever, and you'd have exactly what you wanted. This is what you wanted, right? To go home? You're here."
"More than anything, more than life itself." And I think at that moment, they sort of smile sadly and say, "But I refuse to live in a dream."
As you just kind of say that, the dream begins to wash away back to a room. The bodies of your siblings become nothing more than ice melting in the hot sun. And you're left with a door, one with your name on it, right in front of you.
And Iris, who learned pretty quickly not to go into random doors at the circus, kind of like tilts their head up again and says, "Where does this lead?"
"We both know that answer. And deep in your heart, you know that if you open this door, things will change, but only if you choose to. And that ever-present question lingers in your mind. Do you deserve to?"
And is there any other, is it like just this door and then the tent? Is there any other way away or out, or is there just like darkness around them?
I think it is darkness around you with the same like top of the tent if you were to look up. But around you, there seems to be nothing. You could walk away into the shadow, into something unknown, or you could open that door.
Iris will, their wings will sort of appear, and I learned the pronunciation. It's Catechus.
Catechus, okay.
And their Catechus will sort of materialize in their hands, and they'll sort of like spin it around a couple of times, and then look off into the darkness and says, "I'm not going anywhere without them."
So you walk into the darkness. Yeah. And I think as you turn around and walk into something unknown, you see the door just begin to move miles and miles away until it is out of view. And until you end up somewhere else, we go to Conrad. Conrad Hope, you find yourselves in the familiar streets of downtown, a place that you haven't been in a very long time. You're walking down the streets, coming out of the corner store. Folks are dapping you up. You dap someone up, get in an embrace, and they just like, what's the word on the street?
I think Conrad feels a feeling that has become so unfamiliar to them. And that's just the emotion of being known, of people actually feeling like they understand who you are. And almost like second nature, Conrad just answers kind of jokingly, just kind of like, "Word on the street is that you're single again. Can't keep a woman." Conrad is just in her environment, fully just feeling present, like almost without hesitation.
Yeah, and you just kind of, you quickly get that same response, like, "Hey, I can't be chained up. You know what it is. Like, it is what it is." And I think kind of this exchange happens very quickly, as it often does. And you begin that walk. Where are you going?
On instinct, and at first not realizing where I'm going, I start to go home. But not to Center City. I'm walking to the last place where I was normal.
Yeah. Downtown is a very interesting place. All manners of people live here. All manners of homes exist. And I think kind of as you walk down the street, around the corner, through that alleyway, you find yourself outside that same apartment building. Not the one you live in presently. You know that one's, that was a change. That's a different place. I think you're outside of your home. The one that you've lived at for years and years. Question, this is out of game. Family situation or kind of just what do you think's going on there? Any family there or like who do you think's at home? This is me asking before I keep monologuing.
That is such a good question. I think Conrad, only child, but like a cousin that's like a best friend.
Yeah. Yeah, easy. And I think you run up the stairs. Actually, you don't run up the stairs. I think y'all live on that first floor. Because who wants to go up the stairs? You get a nice like ground floor room. It's either the ground floor or the top floor. But you easily kind of go in, go through the little glass, like the security. There we go. Like the security portion that doesn't really work that well. And you just kind of go right in, go through, and you open that door. And you see exactly who you want to see. Cuz on the couch playing their game system. PS. I think it's a PS2.
Oh, that detail felt like a lot. They're playing Midnight Club.
Literally.
They're playing Ratchet and Clank.
Yo, I was a Ratchet and Clank kid. Yeah. Don't play.
Yeah. I think that's the moment my stomach just plummets. Because I know that there is no way I could be in the same room with my cousin again. I know that I'm not just remembering. I'm not just reminiscing. Even in my wildest dreams, we couldn't just be together and cohabitate. And it breaks my heart to actually have to see them again. So I just walk in and I just say, I missed you.
And I think they just kind of like, they're playing the game and they kind of like look over, what? And then kind of seeing a look on your face, they pause the game and say, hey, I missed you too. Thought you just went to the store. You good?
No, yeah, I'm good. I just, you know, I don't say that often enough at all. And I miss you. I miss you every time I leave. And no matter what happens, just never forget that.
Yeah, of course. They just kind of like, they open their arms for a hug. They said, you look like you need this. You bring it in.
Oh, God, not a hug. I think it's one of those hugs where you hug someone and then you just feel your body just like sigh against them. And Conrad has not had a hug like that in a long time. And just, I think Conrad just falls apart for the first time in years just in that hug.
Yeah. And I think, strangely enough, you, as you kind of like grip in that hug, it feels so real. Same smell, the body weight, the tightness. It's them, as far as you know. And you melt a little bit. And you melt, and you melt, and you melt until you can't open your eyes again. And it feels as though gravity has shifted a bit. You're not standing anymore. You're laying down in a bed, recovering. And your cousin sits on the bedside, holding your hand, gripping it, with tears in their eyes. You good?
And that just... Conrad has never forgotten how they felt waking up after their surgery. And they felt alone. And seeing their cousin there, they know this is a fantasy I can never have. I can't undo that aloneness. So I think Conrad just turns to their cousin and says, why are you doing this? Why are you making me see this?
And I think in that similar fashion, as your cousin kind of like is over on the bedside, just like holding your hand, the hand tightens, not in a painful way, but in a attentive way of just, and the eyes glaze over and you hear that same voice, Pruitt's voice, but you know it's not Pruitt. And they say, this is what you want, right? You wanted to wake up at the right moment, to go back.
I never wanted to go back. I wanted to have done it right the first time. It's already happened. I can't fix it. I fix things for a living. I would have fixed my life if I knew how to. This is fake. I don't want it. I can't have it.
They say, what if you could? Come on.
It will never work. It will never get rid of everything I've done, everything I've become. If there's anyone in the world who could make this right, it's me, and I still can't.
All right.
And I think the ringmaster, your cousin, kind of gets up, kind of like putting their hands out, kind of giving that like gesture of, you got it. And I think you find yourself in a morgue as you gasp awake back to life, because this is the real memory. You know that you didn't wake up with loving folks around you. You woke up with that same doctor that lost that license, now practicing something different. You were that failed, that malpractice, but they're not here. What you see in this singular room, as you kind of look around, where the memory of like a wall should be is darkness, where the ceiling should be is the new pinstripe tent, reminding you just where you are. And where the door is that you left from those years ago is a different door. It's red, it is gold, it has your name on it.
Yeah, I'm not going in that door.
Do you say that like out loud?
Out loud.
Yeah.
I'm not going in that door.
And I think you hear like the voice of the ringmaster that says, why not? You know just as well as I do. That door could fix everything.
That's my job.
All right. Good luck.
I'm like stressed for Conrad.
Yeah. And I think you know that you can turn away and go somewhere else.
I think I just kind of sit up on that like cold surface and just feel it under my hands as well. And just kind of try to push off the memory, try to like stay there, to stay present, because a part of me does want that door.
Yeah. And as you sit there for some time, you see it move further and further away until it's gone. And you're only left in what would feel like a set scene, except the props go off into shadow, and you're left alone yet again until Iris. I think as you walk forward through your darkness, you eventually see another place that looks the same as, not the same as in identical, the same as in it's another set scene, another place of someone else's memory. And you can walk towards it. You easily walk towards it. It's honestly one of the only portions of light that you see walking through this darkness. And you see Conrad sitting on a cold metal table alone.
Trying to think if Iris has seen a hospital bed before. or like not a hospital bed, but like a morgue slab table
thing. This is like a slab table, like purely like no comfort. Like this is a place in which like you would be you would know this, but like people would be operating on cadavers. This place looks depressing and dark, and it is cold.
Okay. Doesn't quite know what's going on here, like as in, oh, this is a morgue, but definitely is concerned as soon as they see Conrad and sort of like runs up to them. And because I imagine she looks kind of sad right now, sort of just very gently reaches out and like goes to like tap them, like doesn't want to startle too bad.
And I think Conrad simultaneously immediately recognizes Iris's touch and recognizes the fact that their entire life has been loneliness until Iris, and that like this reality is worth holding on to, that they're glad that door went away. And they just turn to Iris and say, did he show you something too?
I saw Apollo, but he looks much douchier than that usually.
Yeah, my cousin paused their game way faster than they usually would.
Perfect isn't always good, huh?
Not when perfect isn't real.
What happened to Pruitt?
I don't think Pruitt's here anymore.
Where did they go?
I'm starting to wonder if it's not that people decide to be ringmasters, but that ringmasters are something they become.
And they'll sort of tilt their head, not quite getting it, but getting what Conrad is getting at, and will nod. So what do we do?
We can stick to the mission, get the stone, bring it back to the circus, or we save Pruitt and hope that somehow we can do both at once.
Well, you all are sort of the closest thing to family I have now. It would be a shame to lose that.
He does owe me $50. Let's do it.
He owes me a TikTok dance.
Oh, am I allowed to say TikTok?
I have no idea. I'll say that's problem app. For later.
I'll say clock app. I'll do a...
Yeah, we said it last episode. It's fine. We'll figure it out. It's we're okay. Good. But, and I think as you both kind of say that, another door appears. But this one is all black with lettering that feels carved in, not the same, like painted. And it says Pruitt on it.
I think if we want to get Pruitt back, we have to understand why she gave herself up to the stone.
They'll nod, but sort of like doesn't say anything, but it's just looking like determinedly? Looking straight at this door like we about to go in that door.
Yeah, easy. And I think as you open this door, the light coming from it kind of blinds you a little bit because it's a sunny day and it's warm and it's summer. And you both find yourselves in a place that I don't think you've ever had reason to come to. It's a suburban space where people are walking dogs and people have got nice non-dented cars. Some trees are growing. It's those freshly curated lawns that, you know, y'all probably might not ever get. This is North City. Well, less of the city and more of the north part of the city. And you see a car kind of drive up and park. You see Pruitt step out of the car. And I'm curious. What do you look like, Pruitt? What's going on there? What's the set the scene for me?
Pruitt's definitely hopping out of it's a town car. It's one of them town cars with spacious ass cabins and but good safety features. You know, one of the nice ones. Got a good roll cage. Let's see. Pruitt is wearing, I think it's a cute little outfit. What's them long baggy ass pants called? The ones with no cinching or anything at the bottom. Generally be having just like a strap of cloth, a fabric as a belt that kind of come with the pants. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I don't know what they call them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Them. I love those. They're cute. One of those real cute white blouse. The pants are black. Real cute white blouse. Got a nice shoulder coat on too. It's winter. It's one of those like, did anyone watch Westworld? And you know, in the last season, Tessa Thompson had this like shoulder jacket. Like it was like a suit coat, but it was fully on the shoulders. Like there wasn't even armholes. It's just meant to drape over your shoulder. Yeah, that is that outfit. It's her outfit. Fucking gorgeous. Steps out the car looking real cute and out, and they go towards the back door and open it. And you see them like lean in and undo a couple of things, and they pull out a child. So it's a kid. Just a kid.
Yeah, and I think the kid kind of is like waking up from like a nap, just kind of like, are we home?
Yeah, we're home, baby. Come on.
Okay. And you're able to go inside your beautiful house. And I think as you kind of open the door, are you a single parent or you got a family? Like what's the full setup?
You know, there absolutely was another parent, but I don't think they show up here.
Yeah. And you just kind of you walk in, it's a quiet afternoon as you head on in, and Iris and Conrad, you see Pruitt go inside. You can follow, I'll say you probably do. Just kind of watching from a safe distance. And what's the first thing you do, Pruitt, as you kind of you come into this house? I think maybe even like what you would expect is like maybe another family member, maybe some folks live. It's a big house, so, you know, folks gotta take up space, you know. Past that, it's not a nuclear family, but you know, it would be a big one. A one that where everyone can watch over each other. But I think as you walk in, maybe your arms kind of like you're freed of carrying your child, or maybe you are alone.
I'm with you. I definitely think like I put the kid down and they kind of run off to go do something somewhere in the house. Man, this sucks. First thing, all right, I got to get this out of the way because it's on my brain. First thing I'm doing is closing the blinds because there's some weirdos watching my family from outside. but I think Pruitt would probably go to the kitchen, make some lunch for them and the kid, like making a nice lunch. You know, we had a long morning. We ran out. We did a couple of errands and everything. It's like, it's lunchtime. Let's get some lunch.
Yeah, and you get all the ingredients, you open the fridge, and it is filled to the brim with quality groceries. And you kind of go into the cupboard, and there's, you know, chinaware. I think it's hardware. Like, I don't actually know what it's called. Dinnerware. There we go. And you open the cupboard, and there's dinnerware and lunchware and all of the things that you have to be able to make the perfect lunch for your kid. What are you making?
Definitely a nice grilled cheese sandwich.
Mm.
Good Italian bread. That thick Italian bread. Some Gouda and maybe some sharp cheddar.
Oh, multiple cheeses. That is a good... Maybe even like... I don't know if this is a thing that like companies were always trying to push, but I know that it is a decent combination, like grilled cheese and like tomato soup or something.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And you like, you know, get it all set
fancy.
Up. Yeah.
We got tomato bisque out of a
Ooh, just got oh some my bisque. God.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm.
You make some like, you make the tomato bisque. It's easy. Whip it right on up. You got the freshest ingredients, the freshest spices, all of it. I almost said pepper. A little oregano. I'm an oregano fan personally. But you even have a little carrying tray and you are able to take it upstairs and your kid's just playing. CJ's trying to think. Maybe like drawing. I think that's an easy agnostic thing. Maybe drawing. And they kind of like turn to you as you kind of get there and they're like, hey, is lunch ready?
Yeah, baby, lunch ready. Come on, put your crayons down.
Yep. And they kind of put it down and they start following you to eat. And you come downstairs like you're at the dinner table and it's nice. It's peaceful.
Were you drawing earlier?
And you see that they were carrying it and they have like, and you see a little photo, not a photo, you see a little drawing of like, what is it? You see a little drawing of like you in a little suit. It's like, it's an okay drawing, but it's cute. You in a suit, like you're saying, like, I'd say maybe it's even like a little gold and red tone suit.
Oh my God.
With like them black shoes, just, it's decent. You know, your kid could be an artist one day.
Oh my God. Oh, you're so mean. Oh my God. Why would you do this to me? Oh, thank you. That's so cute. Oh my God. Let me just take that. You know, I'm going to put that up on the wall. I'm framing this. It's mine now. You can't have it back. I hope you're done. It's a work in progress, but it's mine now. It's good. Yep. Hey, let me ask you, how old are you again? I know. Weird question. How old are you right now?
This many. And you see they kind of put their hands up and they like five hands and a singular finger. They're six.
Six. Okay.
Six. My birthday was a year ago because I was five. So yeah, I'm still six. My birthday's not till August.
Mm-hmm. August. Okay. Okay. You know, you've been six for about 7 years now. 7 years. That's how long it's been.
They're just counting as you're like, since seven plus six, 13, 11.
Good enough. Close enough. You know, you're not supposed to be six no more. I'm not going to take that from you. You're in high school now, aren't you? No, still middle school. No, high school. Oh, yeah, you're in high school. I bet you have a lot of friends. You are always such a sweet kid, you know. For anyone listening, that's just putting in the chat, not age-shaming a child. And I'm absolutely age-shaming this child. had the same same Power Rangers 6-year-old birthday party 7 years in a row. I bet you're in high school now. I bet you have a lot of friends. You were such a social kid. Really, really, really loved it. Y'all art is probably still about this good though. You know, that's probably still the same. But you're not supposed to be. This is sloppy work. This is real sloppy work. Not your art. This is beautiful. I'm sorry, baby. Don't let me take that away from you. This is beautiful, but this isn't how things are supposed to be.
And I think as you say that, you hear a knock at the door.
All right. Let's see what you got up your sleeves now. Go to the door and fully open. Don't even look. Just fully open it.
And I think like a haze kind of tries to force its way back over to your mind. And you see two unfamiliar faces.
Long time no see.
Long time no. Come on in. Come in. You want grilled cheese? Soup?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. All right. Yes. Come in. Y'all just sit there. Give me one. All right, no, we all go together. I think it's definitely one of those things where there's already more soup. I made extra soup. I had leftovers planned.
Can you make sure it's not too hot though? Iris does forget that like hot food burns. So cool.
We're gonna teach you to blow. We're gonna teach you to blow.
I tried to remember, but I just get so hungry.
Listen, if I could teach the 6-year-old, I can teach you. Come on, everybody down. Okay. It's over here to the table.
Start blowing on the soup.
Good job. I'm so proud of you. Yep. Well, y'all, this is... Ooh, damn. I have not made a name for this child. Insert nameless 6-year-old. Shit. What's his name? Someone give me a child name. Oh, wow. Yeah, RJ. Not Timmy. Clarence!
Clarence! Tim. Oh, God. These are... okay. What? Craig? No.
You want to do Craig the Creek?
Craig the Creek? No. You can do Lucas? Okay. Serenity?
I like Lucas. I'm good with Lucas. Okay. Name that kid Naruto, no question. No. It's like, all right, so y'all, Pruitt, this is Lucas, and now who in the hell are y'all?
Can I roll to charm?
Yeah, what do you say?
Okay. I just want to say just my name. Just Conrad Hope. Hold on, let me roll. Okay, I got a 10.
10, yeah, no.
Do I roll against that?
If you would like to, you can roll weird.
Nah, yeah, honestly, I'm okay with it. You know, it's 10. Let the success stick. I don't know how this works.
Yeah. And I think you kind of say Conrad Hope, and... I think that hits you heavy, Pruitt, but in a way in which is confusing, because right now, something about this situation, you were already feeling, you were like, this is weird, it's like a couple of these things are wrong. And then two people that you know are not supposed to be here are here. And that name, Conrad Hope. Replays in your mind time and time and time again until you remember. You know them, but you're not quite sure why. Or maybe you do remember why. You know exactly who Conrad is, and you know who Iris is, but you don't know how you got here. Why are you living through a dream with your child, and why are your friends here? I ask.
I'm in this dream with my child because the stone tried to give me what I wanted. He tried to give me something that deep, deep, deep down, I really, really want. I really, really want to be back with my kid. I guess my partner too, and maybe the rest of my family, but I really, really want to be back with my kid. But deeper down, I know that I can't, and that if I could, it wouldn't be like this. If I could come back, it would not look like this. It would not work like this. I would not steal all the years that kid has had to live without me, away from them. I wouldn't just turn back the clock. We'd have to build something new. So it gave me what I wanted somewhere, but not what I asked for. And I'd like to think that my friends are here because they're going to try and get me out of this.
And you are correct, because I think as the realization dawns on you, you blink and you open your eyes crucified.
Oh my God.
Not nailed to the stake, not the iconography of Jesus Christ, but bound to something cold and wet, and it feels lonely, and you look around and there's nothing but darkness.
Hello? I know you're not just gonna stick me up here and leave me. Hello?
And you hear your own voice. But I need you.
We all need a lot of things. I need to get the fuck down.
But you wanted it, didn't you? The power to give, to change the lives. Just look. And I think, like, almost as if it was a TV, like a monitor appears, and you see Frost kind of like sitting with his family, kind of like not even with his brother, I'll say, and his twin brother, someone who just looks the exact same height, probably like dark hair, kind of like a little bit of like fraternal, but not actually. And they're like eating lunch and they look happy. And then you kind of cut over to Veronica, who is like at university in another city, not here, not stuck somewhere, just maybe even like teaching or maybe writing, just kind of successful. And then you cut to, you see not the present moment, you see Iris in a garden, kind of like surrounded with family and friends and people that just look so strange but powerful. And then you see Conrad sitting on the couch playing the game with their cousin as if nothing had ever changed. And then those TVs cut off and the circus is like, we could do this together. You want to change the world. You want to make the world a better place. You want to give. That's what I sense in you. I feel that. And you want to be a ringmaster. We can do that together. And I think you see one final like television of you, your body in the ringmaster's garbs, twirling the staff, having a great time. People are smiling. People are laughing. They have everything that they want at no cost. And then the TV shuts off and it's dark again.
See, I think there's something that you misunderstand about the situation that we find ourselves in. We made a deal. I said, I want to be the ringmaster. This isn't me being the ringmaster. I'm stuck up here on this goddamn cross in the middle of the darkness playing dream games while you're out there with all the power. You didn't give me what I asked for. And a deal is all about honoring your word. You got so much. You got a host. You got a body. You got a beautiful voice that makes angels cry. And I got bullshit. You need me. You're goddamn right about that. Because all you can do is a facsimile of something great. A imperfect copy. The power is mine. I get to use it as I please. I get to be the one to make the changes. And right now, you're doing all the work. Let me down. And don't make me ask twice.
Roll.
Ooh.
Charm.
Oh, one fear. I have to roll in the Discord. I don't have my dice with CJ. I'm scared.
Yeah, what's up?
No, I'm just scared. 2D is D6, right?
Yeah, 2D6 plus 2, since I know that's your charm.
Thank you.
Fail.
No, I got an 11. Eat it.
And you, with bass in your voice and confidence, tell the circus, tell the city to let you down. And you feel the tension of your body being pinned to the wall relax. And your feet touch the ground. And I think in the same moment, a door opens. And your friends come in to this eternal darkness where you can't really see anything, but you can see each other. And I think what happens next is you feel a rumbling. Things start to shake around you and tears in the shadow begin to form. And I think you hear the circus say, "Why must I keep giving without ever receiving a single thing. You want to leave Pruitt? Fine. But I'm not going to make it easy. And with the words ringing through your surroundings, I'm not going to make this easy. You all see that rip that was happening in the Dark Veil tear, and a hand appears, one that is larger than life and bigger than any of you would have ever expected. And it rips, and you see a pinstripe suit with two heads, four arms, and Pruitt's face trapped in the chest. The circus, no. The stone has come to collect on this deal and intends to keep what it was owed. And I think that's where we end it.